rushed out today. So I'll do it.
Hi, Kevin. Is that your place, Ed?
No.
Very spacious. I was going to be jealous.
Oh, no. I'm at my sacristan things on Monday, so I have to be over at church, but there's someone else using the upstairs, so I'm down in the basement.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that my system will not freeze up.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Mark.
I made you the, hi, everyone, is what I meant. But I made you the co-host. I also wanted to make sure you'll be able to send to Dean or Lenny the encapsulation of the meeting that he wants every month from the chair who facilitates.
Yeah, if I remember right, I think David sent me a template thing.
Exactly. Oh, I got to put my virtual background on. Don't want to share my secrets.
Share your secrets.
You're looking at them right now. Don't look. Look away. What's appropriate?
On the closet, Mark.
Am I in the closet? Is that what you just asked me?
Yeah.
I haven't been in the closet. I haven't been in the closet since high school. Happy to say. Proud out by since I was 15. Much to my parents' despair, delight, I mean. And Kevin, so when we, for full council, we do introductions differently. I'll do a roll call once it looks like we're near quorum. We're nowhere near quorum right now, so should give it some time.
Okay.
Make sure I have everything that I need. Mm-hmm. Hi, Wanda. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Yeah, we're still not near quorum. We probably should just give it a few more minutes. Sorry, everyone. I kind of heard that from someone. Okay, let me do another count here. 1, 2. Second page.
Yeah. Now, Liz, how soon can we get our scheduling system?
Okay, I think we actually have quorum now. Yay. Right.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Can everyone hear me? If you can't, then you're not missing much. So I'm going to try to pull up the, we do first.
We can do the roll call first, and then we can have members of the public introduce themselves. So I can start the roll call. If you're a council member, please unmute. All right. Chuck Adams.
Here.
Orrin Allen. Alexandria Andrews is excused. Bill Bloom.
Yes.
Jack Bowman. Ben Kabangan.
Hello.
Cesar Cadabas.
Here.
Edge.
Here.
Billy Cooper. Cicely Emerson. Elaine Flores.
Present.
Matt Geltmaker.
Here.
David Gonzalez.
Here.
Kevin Hutchcroft.
Here.
Thomas Noble.
In the last here. 7 days.
Paul Harkin. Ron Hernandez.
Paul Harkin here.
Oh, okay. Ron Hernandez.
Yes, I'm present, Mark.
Bruce Ito.
Here.
Lee Jewell.
Present.
Juba Kalamka. Lily Krutel.
Here.
Helen Lin. Antoine Matthews. TJ Lee Miyake. Jesse Murphy. Nay Nascimento. Oh, Jesse. Nay Nascimento.
Here.
Irma Parada is excused. Ken Pierce. Darpin Sachdev. Charles Cerrone. Gwen Smith. JP Soto.
Here.
Mike Shriver is on a leave of absence. His proxy is Laura Thomas. Do you accept, Laura?
Sure. Yes.
I'm sorry, where was I? JP Soto, I think, said here. Michelle Spence.
Yeah, here.
Richard Sullivan.
I'm here.
Eric Sutter. Laura Thomas.
Here.
Are there any council members who just came on who I did not call?
Ken Pierce.
Thank you.
Jackson Bowman.
Thank you, Jack. All right, we have quorum just by the skin of our teeth. All right, did it. And so I guess now would be members of the public introducing themselves.
Are there any members of the public?
Hi, this is Beth from HIV Health Services.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda, Area AIDS Education Training Center.
Yes, hi, Amanda.
Yes, Jessica Price here also from the AIDS Education Training Center.
Great.
Wanda Vasquez, Community Liaison GENS and Infectious Disease.
Okay, great.
Bill Hirsch with the AIDS Legal Referral Panel and the HIV AIDS Provider Network.
Here you go.
Hi, this is Lance Toma with San Francisco Community Health Center and the HIV AIDS Providers Network.
Hello, Lance. Anyone else? And do we go with the minutes or the agenda?
Yes, we do. One moment. Let me share screen.
Oh, I think I could actually do that. But you did it quicker.
So
I trust everyone had a chance to review this at least briefly. I'll give you another moment or two.
A couple changes, if you don't mind, I can throw in. We can remove the State Office of AIDS. Alexandria is absent. However, if you've reviewed it or after you've reviewed it, if you have any questions or comments, you can email her directly, or if you don't have her email address, you just send on to me and I'll forward. And then the second adjustment, so that might mean we might need to pull one of the general updates or committee updates to replace that if we need to. And then Membership update. Unfortunately, our new applicant couldn't make this meeting. Per the membership guidelines, the applicants do need to be present. So we'll be moving that applicant's vote to next month. That agenda will stay the same because there is at least one renewal if they appear.
So with that and without objection, we can approve that by consensus. That will be the order.
All right, the minutes. All right, so I'll scroll through this.
So while we're on this, we
have our pro forma from 1 through 6. And then we had our state office of update. We had a presentation on micro elimination from Katie Burke, Jordan Ackerley, and Chris Toomey. We had an STI update from Dr. Cohen. We had a whole slate of membership renewals, committee updates. And then we had our general updates from CHEP, HHS, Care Coalition, Getting to Zero. There was no CPG update. Does anyone want me to scroll back to any particular page? All right, I'll stop share.
Any changes to the minutes? Seeing none, I think we can approve that by consensus. That will be the order. And next up is it announcements?
Yes, correct.
Are there announcements? No announcements.
I'm not seeing any raised hands.
Okay, I'm looking for those raised hands. Those are little bitty things. All right, so I think we can go to public comment then. Even with all the members of the public, we have no comment.
Hi, this is Amanda. We have a session coming up on August 28th. That I just want to let people know, it's called Harm Reduction and Health Equity. It's going to be with Monique Tula from the Harm Reduction Coalition and Bronze Courtney from HEPAC. And it is 11:30 to 12:30 on August 28th. And we're going to be doing a series of pharmacology series that we just put together today. So I'll give you more info about that maybe next month, but August 24th and August 28th, we're going to be doing some HIV pharmacology training open to everybody. Thank you.
Any other announcements?
For the recording, I will say that it looks like we've been joined by Juba Kalamka, Jesse Murphy, and Billy Cooper.
Hey!
Yay.
Hey, Miss Billy.
Hey, now.
What was that, Miss Billy? I didn't hear you.
Hey!
Okay. Are we ready for the council staff update?
Yes. Let's see. I have two updates. One is that the steering committee and membership have determined the date of the summit. This is, of course, our annual resource allocation and prioritization summit. It usually occurs sometime between July and September. It will occur actually during the what would have been the regularly scheduled council meeting in September. So that would be, of course, the fourth Monday, September 28th. We're going to try to stick to 2 hours, perhaps going up to 3, but really, as people have made clear, attention loses focus after 2 hours, so we will try that. And I think we can do it because there'll be a couple presentations that we actually won't be able to have during what would normally be a 6-hour session. Any questions on the date or the logistics of the upcoming September Prioritization Resource Allocation Summit? Seeing no questions. Okay, my second announcement is that Javon Bright has unfortunately left the council. He's resigned. Allie or Melina, I don't think Dave is with us. Do you have any announcements from staff?
None for me.
Not for me.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, sorry I'm late.
Mark, did he give a, hey Mark, did he give a reason why he was leaving? I know you don't have to, but.
I can say that it was for personal reasons.
Sorry, I missed something.
Yes, Charles, the summit will be taking place on September 28th from 4 to 6. That will be during our regularly scheduled council meeting, if we were to have one that month. And okay. I also announced that, unfortunately, Javon Bright has left the council due to personal reasons.
Okay. We'll miss him.
Is that all for the council staff update?
That is all.
Okay. And we're going to skip the Office of AIDS update, correct? And the membership. Correct. So let's, Bill, are you ready for the Happen update?
Oh, we don't need to skip membership. I think we can, I don't think that the membership restrictions around being here were for renewals. Correct me if I'm wrong, any membership committee members or fellow council staff. That would mean that we can still vote on the one renewal we have before us.
That would make sense because yeah, they're often not here.
TJ Lee Miyake. So this will be a motion on the floor coming from membership. And so you could just do an affirmative vote rather than a roll call, see if there's any objections to approving TJ Lee Miyake's renewal.
Approved.
Any opposed? All right. Congratulations, TJ Lee Miyake, wherever you may be. You've been renewed.
Okay, Bill, Lance, are we ready for Happen?
Hi, folks. My co-chair and I will give a brief update on who we are at Happen and what we've done recently and what some of the challenges are that we are facing. So this is intended to be a brief report. We hope to have a little bit of time for questions and, of course, are always happy to engage with council members and talk with folks offline if you wish. So for folks who are not familiar with the HIV/AIDS Provider Network, we are a coalition of agencies that provide an array of health services to people who are living with and at risk of HIV. We do a number of things to coordinate services amongst our member agencies, B, to advocate with the city around issues related to contracting, and then perhaps most importantly, to advocate for additional resources to ensure that the safety net of services is still available to our clients. I'm going to briefly review some of the budget successes that we had last year, and then talk a little bit about our budget work for this year. So very quickly, last year we faced about a $66,000 cut in our care award. We were able to get that backfilled by the city. For the first time, we were able to get a modest cost of doing business increase for contractors. We were able to get several million dollars in additional housing subsidies for seniors and adults with disabilities, including people living with HIV. We were able to get continued support from the city for about $500,000 in expanded mental health services for long-term survivors. We were able also to get about $500,000 to help with one of the RCFCI providers. There were a few things that we were not able to do, including secure funding to launch overdose prevention services. This year, we had ambitious goals, especially around expanding capacity for housing subsidies for people living with HIV. We have shifted as a result of the COVID crisis, and our budget advocacy has been very focused on avoiding any service cuts given the extensive budget deficit that the city is facing. We are very appreciative that the Department of Public Health was able to use some of its new federal funding to ensure that we don't see service reductions for people living with HIV and AIDS, but we are very disappointed that we aren't going to be able to move forward with our goals for expanding capacity within the system to address the needs of our clients. We are anxiously awaiting what the mayor's budget will look like. The mayor's budget will be presented on Friday. So far, we understand that the Department of Public Health has not proposed budget cuts with a 10% budget reduction target, but we will see more in the details that are presented by the mayor on Friday. I would say one of the things that I want to just make sure that folks in the community appreciate is that while it is always difficult to provide public comment around the budget process, it is going to be especially challenging this year. And I think that we look forward to working with all of you to make sure that there is an opportunity for meaningful comment to the city around whatever service reductions are proposed by the city. And with that, I'm gonna pass it off to my esteemed colleague, Lance, from the San Francisco Community Health Center.
Thanks, Bill, and hi, everyone. It's good to be with you all. Thank you so much for all your work on the council. And you know, I know Bill and I look forward to being with you, especially once a year, to share about Happen and our priorities and our member organizations. And I appreciate that you allowed us to be at this meeting with short notice, because to Bill's point, you know, what we're anticipating is in August, actually on the date of the next council meeting on August 24th, is probably the day that we will be advocating, if necessary, around the budget for the city and any potential cuts. And we're just hoping that we can stave off anything until then, but that's to be seen. So, you know, I wanted to just share a bit about the impact that COVID has been having on our HIV organizations. The Happen Executive Committee surveyed all of our member organizations so that we could understand the impacts and make sure that we're monitoring those impacts. And so I just have a couple things to share so you all are aware of what's going on the ground. And I know many of you do know, because many of you are right there on the ground with us. But you know, so we were able to survey our members. About two-thirds of our member organizations were able to respond to this survey. And just to let you know, I think by and large, the organizations that are providing HIV services, and of course, many of them and us are going much beyond HIV, in our portfolios, but really the agencies are going above and beyond in this time of responding to COVID-19 and maintaining HIV services. I do think on the whole, the HIV CBOs have been able to continue services, but many have pivoted to, of course, virtual telehealth, telemedicine, remote services. And so that's been the bulk of, I think, the energy in shifting. You know, for the most part, what we've seen is that agencies have been able to maintain their staff. You know, we've been concerned around, you know, funding, of course, and service continuity, but also staffing. But, you know, with the Department of Public Health support, I think also, if eligible, almost all the organizations that were eligible got the Paycheck Protection Program loan. And then private foundations have also stepped up during this time. So all but one or two organizations have been able to hold on to their staff as opposed to needing to potentially lay off or furlough staff. And then also what we've seen is a number of organizations have been able to support the Department of Public Health's efforts around COVID-19 Departmental Operations Center, the DOC, in outreach, contact tracing, and the outbreak team. So we've had a number of member organizations provide support in that way too to the Department of Public Health. So that's on the good. I think there's really great things to say around all of the activities that have been going on and services. On the concerning side, I think what we also saw was that, of course, there's on the ground need more than ever in our client communities. I think you can anticipate, and as you have all been tracking, but food, housing, mental health, substance use, and emergency financial assistance needs. Those are the ones that have been raised across almost all organizations that they're seeing an increase in need in our client communities. In terms of our services, just so you know, I do think what's been hard to maintain at the level pre-COVID are a lot of prevention services. So when we look at HIV testing, STI, Hep C testing, there has been many organizations who've needed to decrease that in order to comply with all of the guidelines from the city, and a few have needed to suspend those services. In particular, what we saw through the survey is that PrEP services have dramatically decreased because of COVID-19, with close to 75% of our organizations that responded to our survey needing to decrease or in some cases suspend those services in this moment. In addition, harm reduction, syringe services, psychosocial and medical case management services, we've also seen decreases, but not suspending, or, you know, so those have been decreased. And in general, I think what we saw there continues to be a need across all organizations for more PPE supplies. You know, I think we're seeing that organizations need help. So we're gonna be, of course, working with the Department of Public Health and the city to make sure that we can support and kind of find ways for agencies to have access to more PPE. And I think we're committed to monitoring the situation. I think what happened, exec is aware that, you know, I think in this time we're doing what we need to do, but of course there's prevention services and services in general that we're concerned about what the impact this has, you know, on all of our efforts, especially around getting to zero and ending the epidemics of HIV, STIs, and Hep C, you know, what impact this will have, and making sure that we're monitoring it and addressing it and making sure that we're letting you all know what's happening, but also work with our member organizations to ensure that they're able to, over the course, whatever happens, you know, to sustain the services and hopefully to bring those back online in some way as we persist through this time. So that's sort of in a nutshell some of the findings that we got.
Very good. Thank you very much, Lance and Bill. Do the members have any questions of Lance and Bill?
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just want to, Lance, that was really helpful, so I appreciate the overview. And in my activation work, I've been working with a lot of CBOs and helping them with the contact tracing, the case investigation, onboarding, and it's been a heavy lift. So just the CBOs really have been stepping up, and it's been great because we cannot do the work without them, specifically with regards to the monolingual Spanish-speaking population that's been so devastated. Over 50% of the current investigations are among that particular population, which makes up such a small percentage of the city. So the disparity is huge. I've also noticed within the CBOs, like the DPH is committed to not defunding anybody, but unfortunately, as all of you know, CBOs have multiple funding sources, and not all of those funding sources have committed to that. Mm-hmm. And so CBOs are needing to take the funds that is remaining from the DPH and actually try to keep their other programming going. So stretching staff even further in a very stressful moment. So just to kind of add that layer of complexity to what's going on.
Thanks, Thomas. You know, I really appreciate, I mean, I know you've been doing a lot, I mean, around this to support organizations, but what we did hear from organizations is that there's a willingness to step up in whatever way, specifically around contact tracing. So, I think there could be more support that we could kind of leverage amongst the organizations, depending on what your needs are. So I'd love to, we want to still be in continued conversation around that.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. Go for it. Sorry.
So a lot of these concerns were mentioned in the getting to zero as well, Lance, and thanks for that summary. I'm just curious, is there any sense that the demand has dropped dramatically for people who were seeking HIV, STI, or PrEP services? Because I know that the actual services dropped, but I'm trying to just, did it drop in concert with the fact that people were perhaps afraid of exposure to COVID, so not showing up at the places where they could get those services? Is there a guesstimate about, you know, that versus we just had to pull the services because, you know, people weren't sure of protocols around testing during COVID, et cetera?
Yeah. Hey, Paul. Yeah. Thank you for that. You know, we didn't survey for that. So that didn't come out in the survey. But what I can tell you anecdotally, what I'm seeing here at San Francisco Community Health Center is that the need, I don't think the need decreased. What we saw from the beginning over the first couple of months is that we just actually heard more and more that folks needed access to testing. And so we actually had to figure out how to start providing that in a kind of limited window and, you know, with all of the protocols and guidelines in place. So we were seeing that there was need, you know, and I think it was both and. It was because folks, you know, had to scale back because of the order and complying with guidelines. And then, of course, the need didn't stop. So my concern is that there's continued need. And I think there's also just barriers, not from the service providers, just barriers in general because of what's going on with respect to COVID-19 that will impact and have greater, you know, kind of down the line impacts for us, for the community.
I might note that the State Office of AIDS did issue a management memo that was a very positive policy development. They approved the use of the PrEP app program to cover expenses for temporary in-home use of the oral HIV test connected to PrEP use. So there's that. Were there any other questions of Lance or Bill? I'm not seeing any. Mark, you see any?
No, I'm not seeing any.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that very helpful report. Elizabeth and Helen, are they up next?
They are, but I don't think Elizabeth has joined us yet, so we might want to do another agenda item, like, say, the committee check-ins while we wait.
Okay, all right. Let's see. Committee check-ins. Let's start with membership. Chuck, are you membership?
That would be Ed Chitty or Elaine Flores.
Oh, Elaine. That's right. Okay. Elaine, do we have an update on membership?
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah. Hello?
I'm not sure if Elaine was at the last, were you at the last membership committee meeting, Elaine?
Yeah, I was. The only thing that we did so far was we already went ahead and approved for TJ's renewal, and we still need to interview with Derek, but other than that, it was a very short meeting. Anything to add, Ed?
No, just the continued parking lot issue that we'll continue to discuss about agencies and number of council members that certain agencies may have.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Elaine. Community engagement.
That would be Ben or Eric, and I don't think Eric is with us, so that would be Ben.
Yeah, the committee continued to discuss data collection tools for COLAs and the needs assessment, and I believe that was it. If anybody else was there, do you have anything to add to that?
Seeing none, let's move on to council affairs.
Yeah, we went over basically what we're doing today with the presentations, and then that's where we first started discussing the date for the September meeting. So besides that, that's about all we did.
Have I missed any of the committees? Is that it, Mark?
No, you have not. Looks like we might still have to move some agenda items around. I don't think Liz has joined us yet, so you might want to do, say, a check-in from CHEP or Getting to Zero or Care Coalition.
Okay. Thomas, do you have any updates for CHEP?
I do. What did I write down? So the ending of the epidemic stuff is still moving forward. So it's just slow and obviously with everything that's going on, but it is present and with us. And the council just, the leadership, Schreiber sent a nice email to Hannah and Shelley just with regards to where we're at. And I feel like things are basically on point for that. So, and we'll continue to keep people updated with regards to when I'm spacing on the terminology with regards to the, I want to say letter of consent, but that's not the right word. Help me out, folks. Concurrence, letter of concurrence is needed. In CHEP, we basically, Teresa Ick has accepted another position within the DPH. So we're going to be losing her and kind of replacing staff at this point. It might be a little bit of a challenge. We are not doing any HIV, Hep C, STD training at the moment, just due to the fact that the demand is not there with regards to having a lot of new counselors needed into the mix. But once that demand rears itself, we will step into that. We have been supporting Alto Pharmacy with regards to doing HIV testing and resulting for an effort that they're doing with regards to trying to reach men of color, MSM specifically of color in their pharmacy settings. So it's kind of an interesting prep demo project that's hopefully going to be successful, and we're happy to support that. CHEP staff has also been working in the I&Q hotels with regards to making sure people just doing wellness checks and doing what they can to assure that people are not overdosing basically and providing services and having space and within that particular environment. And then the last thing is we did have a funding, we had a small amount of funding to help three different jurisdictions throughout the US to do overdose prevention work. And one of those jurisdictions, Perry County from Missouri, pulled out of that, but NACHO basically asked us to keep the funding and try to figure out another way to actually implement that effort. So the COVID response has been really challenging and trying to make that contract happen. So we're trying to figure out how to basically pull that off with two other counties. One is outside of Chicago and the other one is outside of Denver, and how to support their overdose prevention work from San Francisco, basically. So those are the CHEP updates. Any questions?
I'm not seeing any hands.
Okay. All righty.
So moving forward, I guess I could give the HHS update.
Would you like me to share screen or do you have that, Kevin?
I guess I think let me try to do that. I don't know if that's going to work. Oops. Would you do that, Mark?
Double.
Thank you.
All right. There it is.
Okay, so just an update on how COVID has impacted HHS staffing. Some staff are continuing to be activated for COVID-related work. Currently, one of our staff, John Ainsley, is working full-time for the COVID response, and another is expected to be activated full-time in a week or two. HRSA conducts a monthly webinar to share information among grantees of Ryan White on various administrative matters. I wanted to note that this month, Bill Bloom and Dean Goodwin were asked to present at this month's webinar covering San Francisco's best practices during the epidemic, covering the degree of impact on San Francisco and its system of HIV care, and the local issues and needs that have been posed by COVID and the various things that went into decision-making on allocating CARES Act funding. That might be a presentation that the council might be interested in hearing in, Mark, in case the schedule allows for that. DPH and San Francisco General clinics and programs have been reopening in recent weeks since the shelter-in-place took effect, and many clinic appointments were conducted via telehealth, social distancing, and other physical modifications have been made and will continue going forward for both clinicians and clients. During shelter in place, only emergency dental services were provided. Non-emergency dental services have resumed in clinic spaces recently, but access is limited due to social distancing and other safety measures. Quality management trainings continue to be on hold. We are taking a look at both the content and the logistics for these trainings, especially with the recent events spotlighting police violence and racial injustice. Those are issues that are certainly related to our work and health disparities. We also need to adjust to the very practical realities of online webinars as opposed to in-person training. So as far as administrative and community updates, we have Part A grant application due October 7th, a little over 2 months, and we are beginning work toward that with the grant writer. There were multiple Part A conditions of award due in June and many others due to HRSA at the end of July, and I think it goes into early August. The 2020 National Ryan White Conference on Care and Treatment will be held August 11th through the 14th. This event marks the 30th year of the Ryan White Care Act, and that makes some of us feel perfectly ancient. It will be online, of course, and there's no charge to attend. Thank you, Ben, for confirming that, I think. The conference agenda, I believe, was just announced Friday, and there are six tracks, population-based approaches to access, engagement and care, and health outcomes. Secondly, data utilization. Third, systems-level models of HIV service delivery. Fourth, clinical quality management. Fifth, Ryan White planning, allocation of resources, and collaborative partnerships. And finally, Ryan White Fiscal and Grants Management. Registration is open, and I think council support is distributed information along those lines. the State Office of AIDS has released new ARIES, which is the, you all know, is the state client level data management system. They've issued improvements and a set of reports and asked our office to for assistance in testing those new functionalities. And I believe we're reporting on that at the end of the week. I think Beth is here. She knows more if you have questions. And finally, Dean, Bill, Beth, everyone in our office wanted to extend a heartfelt thank you and an acknowledgement for the extraordinary service from Mary Lawrence Hicks. I believe 23 years, I'm reading, of service as a clinician, providing services at Ward 86, 15 years as Director of Community Programs and Deputy Clinic Director. Many years of involvement in this council. She served as a committee chair and council co-chair, right up to leading to the integration of the two councils. She's retiring at the end of the week, and we will all miss her greatly. We wish her well. And that's it for HHS update. Any questions? I see no hands. I see Helen is here.
Helen, but Helen is here as far as the presentation goes to answer questions. I think the actual presenter will be Liz, who's not quite here yet. So you might want to do updates from Getting to Zero and Care Coalition until she arrives.
That sounds good. Paul, can you feel Getting to Zero?
Yeah, so Getting to Zero committee meeting, we were talking about the thing that Lance was mentioning earlier around testing. And there was a sense that CBOs would like to get more firm guidance from DPH. It seems like there's not clear guidance about how to continue to offer testing at CBOs or in clinical settings at this point. And so there was a request to follow up with Tracy around that. There was a concern around so many people becoming unemployed and how insurances would be impacted and how is that impacting our access to PrEP. We know, and then apparently the Getting to Zero website has a lot of good information around that, and want to make sure that that's getting out there. And then perhaps if any other CBOs or agencies are experiencing that, they're just checking in on what their kind of communication plan is to support people who have went from being fully insured to having it cut off and how that's impacting access to things like PrEP. There was also a concern around the housing people with HIV who are previously homeless in the SIP hotels or the Q&Is, just the lack of transparency about access to those housing settings. It's very complicated. I don't think that when you've got a situation where like Dr. Deb Bourne, Dr. Barry Zevin and Nurse Kate Shooten don't know who's running what, and they're usually very well plugged in, it's a little cause for concern. And I'd really like to get a better handle on, you know, like if living with HIV and being houseless is or is not criteria to get you access, because it seems like it's not consistent and there's different agencies running different SIP hotels. And I don't know what other folks feel around that, but I would certainly concur that it's a very complicated salad to unravel. And then just in terms of some calls to action, Getting to Zero what is writing a letter of support for AB 362, the overdose prevention project that's coming up in Sacramento, where there was some advocacy around housing people living with HIV and SIPs, along with seeking some clarification there. I think that's the main gist of things.
if anybody has any questions. Yeah, that's it.
Any questions of Paul?
Charles looks like he has, oh no, he has a thumbs up. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you've certainly heard about the crisis in housing, these hotels. Let's see. Lee, are you available to do the CARE Coalition update?
Yes. Hi, guys. How you doing? How you doing? I have an appropriations update. The House has passed four bill minibus containing the Agriculture FDA, Interior Environment, Military Construction VA, and State and Foreign Operations Appropriations. These bills require President Trump to send funds to the WHO, the World Health Organization, blocks transferred funding for the border wall, includes $250 billion in emergency spending beyond the 2019 budget agreement. Also, the House Appropriations Committee released the details of the second minibus, which will be considered this week and will contain seven of the remaining fiscal year 2021 spending bills, including commerce, justice, science, defense, energy and water development, financial service and general government, homeland security, labor HHS, which is where Ryan White is, and transportation, housing, and urban development. Vote should be completed by the end of the week. Along with Kevin mentioning the Ryan White conference, I'm gonna add the United States Conference on HIV/AIDS, UCHA, will take place October 21st to 23rd. Registration is free for the first 4,000 community/nonprofit registrants. All content will be available online for free after the conference. If anybody wants more information about this, contact Mark and I can forward the information back to him. And then that's it for, one more thing. The board is gonna be meeting, for the CARE Coalition is gonna be meeting on July 28th to deal with some fiscal matters. And that's about it for CARE Coalition. Any questions?
I do not see any questions.
That would leave the last update to be from you, Kevin, regarding California Planning Group.
Yeah, and I actually have not had much interaction. I've tried to keep in touch with their goings on. I understand June 16th, there was a meeting, a virtual meeting of the full membership and an orientation for new members. They reelected the community co-chair, and Mark, you enthusiastically offered to put together a, I don't know how enthusiastic, frankly, but you did, offered to help with gathering a letter that we have to produce, formally announcing, I guess, Ken stepping down as a representative from our council. I think that was about it. I think the next meeting is roughly scheduled in October. Hasn't been specified beyond that.
Okay, I still do not see Liz. I'm wondering, Helen, if you wouldn't mind contacting her. We can move on to one of the two votes we have. We'll do maybe the shorter one. I'll share screen so we can see the criteria and the definitions for severe need and special populations. One moment. All right. Sharing screen. So this document is a motion that's already on the floor coming approved from steering before you to vote. This is our annual update of our eligibility criteria. I'll start with that first box first. This is... as I said, every year based on the parallel adjustment of the federal poverty level. In addition, earlier this year, if you recall, the council did vote to actually increase from 400% to 500% so that we can parallel what is happening on a state level. So for this year, that would mean that eligibility is 12,760 for the FPL, which amounts to 63,800 for one person. So that's eligibility criteria for accessing Ryan White Part A services. The next are severe need and special populations. Of course, these are most relevant when it comes to eligibility and funding for our centers of excellence. So for severe need, it's a similar annual adjustment that's based around FPL. So again, for 2020, that would be 150% of FPL. So that's 19,140 for one person and 25,860 for two people. And then there are special populations definition. As you can see here, they're bullet pointed in those four bullet points. There were no changes made to this definition. So it continues to remain populations with the lowest rate of viral suppression, who experience health disparities, communities with linguistic or cultural barriers to care, individuals being released from incarceration or who have a criminal justice history, and of course, people living with HIV age 60 years and older. Are there any questions about this document before I stop share? Yeah, I'll stop share. So the discussion is on the floor now about this document. If there's any thoughts or questions about what you just saw, and I'm not seeing. So that means then we would go right to a vote. Again, this is a motion on the floor, does not need to be moved or seconded because it's coming from committee. Because this is, of course, dealing with our eligibility to services, we'll have to vote. So if all council members can now unmute, and the motion, of course, is to accept the document that that was just reviewed. Chuck Adams.
Yes.
Bill Bloom.
Yeah, if you don't mind sharing my slides.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Thanks, Helen.
Jack Bowman.
Yes.
Ben Kabangan.
Yes.
Cesar Cadabes. Cesar Cadabes. Ed Chitty.
Yes.
Billy Cooper.
Yes.
You fill me with delight, Miss Billy. Elaine. Elaine Flores?
Call me, Mark. Yes.
Matt Geltmaker?
Yes.
David Gonzalez?
Yes.
Kevin Hutchcroft and Thomas Noble in unison, please.
Yes.
Paul no. Harkin. Just kidding. Yes.
Paul Harkin?
Yes.
Ron Hernandez?
Yes.
Bruce Ito?
Yes.
Lee Jewell?
Yes.
Juba Kalanka?
Yes.
Lily Crutell?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Has TJ Lee Miyake joined us? No, I don't think so. Has Antoine Matthews joined us? No. Jesse Murphy?
Yes.
Nina Cimento?
Yes.
Has Cicely Emerson joined us? Nope. Okay, moving on. Ken Pierce?
Yes.
Darpin Feshtev joined us. Laura Thomas for Mike Shriver?
Yes.
Charles Cerrone? Charles Cerrone? Has Gwen Smith joined us? J.P. Soder?
Yes.
Michelle Spence?
Yes.
Richard Sullivan?
Yes.
Has Eric Sutter joined us? Laura Thomas?
Yes.
Motion carries. That is our eligibility criteria and our definitions moving forward until next year. I think Liz has joined us. Did I hear? Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I'm on the line. Hi, thank you so much. Sorry for the delay. I had some trouble with Zoom.
No worries. Would you or Helen like to share your screens?
Yeah, Helen's gonna share her screen. So thank you so much for having us here today. I'll just start with a brief introduction. I'm the director of the pop-up program at Ward 86. And thank you for having us here to share. Helen, do you want to introduce yourself, or does everyone know you already?
Everyone knows here.
I'm known here to the council, but I provide coverage and consultation for the pop-up program for the social work interventions. Thanks.
Great. So the pop-up clinic is designed for to particularly serve people who are struggling with unstable housing or experiencing homelessness in our HIV clinic at Ward 86. And so we have been around for a year and a half, and I'll share a little bit with you all about going. Okay. This is just, we have nothing to disclose. We did get funding from the NIH to do this work, and then we got an unrestricted grant from the Gilead Foundation, which is basically they gave us money to evaluate this program, but didn't have any say in sort of the program or any of the evaluation we did. So the premise of this program comes from a lot of the information you all already know, but basically the EPI report for in 2018 really showed us that there was such a big inequity between people who were virally suppressed, who were homeless, which viral suppression was about 33%, versus those who were housed where it was closer to 75%. So we saw a big disparity there between our housed and unhoused folks. And then also research done in our division showed that actually people who are diagnosed with HIV and they're homeless at the time of their diagnosis, they're 27 times more likely to die compared to those who are housed. So see lots of disparities between these two populations who have HIV in the city. And this really, you can go to the next slide. And this really made us think, like, while we all know that affordable housing is the answer, and that, you know, has been shown time and time again to improve HIV outcomes, health outcomes, mental health outcomes, for individuals, and, you know, the housing first model is the model. We really have a housing crisis in our city, as many of you know and see now. What can we do now for our patients while we continue to advocate for more housing and policy to change housing policies? And so in order to do that, we took a look at our clinic and really tried to look at, you know, what was actually going on in our clinic. So at Ward 86, we serve about 2,500 uninsured or either uninsured patients or patients with Medi-Cal. And of our 2,500 patients, about a third are homeless or experience unstable housing. And what we did is we did a survey where we showed different pictures of different housing types. So either renting or owning, being in a treatment program, being an SRO, staying with a friend, staying in a shelter, staying on the street. And we had people circle like what represents your most recent housing. And what we saw is that viral suppression went down as housing became more unstable, and that actually mean viral load went up, with the highest being 87,000 for those who are sleeping outdoors. So that's one thing we noticed about our patient in clinic, that there was actually like a dose response relationship. As housing got more unstable, viral suppression went down. And then you can go to the next slide. And then we also saw, you can see in the darker blue versus the lighter blue. So the dark blue, the darkest blue is people who are living on the street. The medium blue is people who are temporarily housed. So, couch surfing or in a treatment program, and stably housed are the people who are renting or owning. And so we saw that people were actually engaging in care. If you want to go back one slide, Helen, they were engaging in care, but they're engaging in care in urgent care or an emergency room if they're more unstably housed or homeless. And so we know those are places where your immediate needs may be met, but they're not great places for chronic care in terms of care for HIV or care for other chronic illnesses. And so with all this information, you can go to the next slide. We came up with pop-up. So pop-up is housed in Ward 86. So we're like a
program within the larger clinic. We basically have a few tenets of our model of care. So on the upper left, we really pride ourselves on low threshold access. So when you're enrolled in our program, you don't need to make any appointments. Anybody can come in Monday through Friday, 1 to 5, to see one of our providers, one of our social workers, or our nurses. We incentivize people to come to care. So we actually give people $10 gift cards for coming into care if they at a minimum of once a week. We give gift cards when people get lab draws, and then we particularly incentivize people to get undetectable, and we give $25 for undetectable viral loads, and we check those every, 2 to 3 months, and we give it gift cards out for sustaining their viral load at undetectable. And then even though we're a drop-in clinic, and so we're providing care in that drop-in model, we're actually doing comprehensive primary care. So we get meds delivered to clinic, and people, restart their medications, same day restarts, and then can pick up their medications with us. We do, vaccines, cancer screenings, manage other chronic illnesses. We have a psychiatrist on our team, who I actually called today when I was the pop-up provider, who we can call by phone and either put him on speaker or talk to him over the phone to do medication management for psychiatric diagnoses. And then we do substance use treatment in our clinic. So we start buprenorphine and do other substance use disorder treatment. In terms of outreach, we have a pretty large team, a few of the most important people on our team are our navigator that can go out and see people in the community and navigate them to care with us or other appointments they need to go to. And then people have direct access to a pop-up phone where they can text and call us for questions or to get in touch with their care team. So that's sort of the model of the care. You can go to the next slide. So our eligibility criteria right now are that we want to see people who are viremic or coming to us off ART. We want to see people who are homeless or unstably housed. Because we really want to capture people who are failing sort of usual care or usual care is not really working for them. One of our criteria is that they have to have missed a primary care appointment and actually have dropped into Ward 86 two times in the last year, and this was based on the assumption that we wanted people to be engaged somewhat with our clinic in order for them to enroll in pop-up. We get referrals a few different ways. So when we first started, we actually looked at our surveillance data of who was viremic, who was homeless. We did chart reviews to see who would meet criteria. And then as word of mouth has spread through our clinic and through the LINCS program at the Department of Public Health, we've gotten referrals from other providers, other staff, and other people in the Department of Public Health. You can go to the next slide. So far, of the 152 eligible people, we've enrolled 75. There are mostly men, 35% are Black, 45% are white. The majority of our patients are actually street homeless. 40% have a CD4 less than 200. And we see a very high proportion of our patients who have a substance use disorder. So 100% have a substance use disorder and 91% are using methamphetamines. 77% have a mental health diagnosis, with the most common one being depression. You can go to the next slide. And then these are our early outcomes. So about 80% of people restarted ART within 7 days of enrolling in the program. You can go back one slide. 68% return for a visit within 1 month and 91% within 3 months. And then our entire clinic population in pop-up was unsuppressed at baseline, and we have suppressed more than half of those individuals just in the first 6 months of them being in our program. You can go to the next slide. So we recently presented this at AIDS 2020, and I think, some of the lessons that we think we've learned so far is, one is just individuals who are living with HIV who are struggling with housing in our city have very high proportion of substance use and mental health diagnoses. And programs like pop-up that are low threshold but very high intensity could potentially improve outcomes for people living with HIV. We showed this through, you know, them engaging with us as well as, you know, improving viral suppression in the first 6 months. Our next steps are really trying to understand, like, what are the factors of our program that actually help people achieve and maintain viral suppression? And then obviously enrolling more people to capture a larger proportion of individuals who have HIV who are struggling with housing. And then the last slide is just our team, and there's many, 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 many people to thank that work very hard on this team. And I think that's it. I'd be happy to take any questions from any of you all. One question in the chat. The gift cards we use are Safeway for the most part. That seems to be the most popular gift card, although we have had Burger King and we have had Walgreens. But Safeway is sort of our go-to.
Other questions? Helen, did you want to add anything at all?
Go ahead, Helen, but yeah, I'll just answer this one question. So yeah, 75 out of 152. Yeah, so we have not been able to reach the remainder. So when we started, we looked at surveillance data to see who, you know, is viremic, and then did chart reviews to try to figure out where, you know, what people's stories were. And there's a lot of evidence around the country that these sort of data to care models, where you start with the data and then try to get people into clinic, have limitations. Mm-hmm. And I think we had a similar experience, even though we shared that list with the links team that links patients from, you know, to care, we still haven't been able to reach, you know, about half of the patients who are eligible. And so that is a next step for us as well of, like, how do we, you know, get these people who we know could benefit from this model, but have it just dropped into our clinic or been referred to us.
Hey, everyone. I wanted to address a question that came to us through I think that someone from AHP may have been interested in sort of an overall sense of what types of mental health diagnoses are patients end up with or have been given. And by and large, meth dependence, stimulus abuse, stimulant use has been the most popular, closely followed by major depression, bipolar one, a mood disorder, PTSD, psychosis, anxiety disorder, and with a few people who have been diagnosed with schizoaffective bipolar type, ADHD, and maybe just more like a more general psychoactive substance use. So not everyone gets a dependence or abuse diagnosis, because we're just engaging patients, and not all of them, you know, we start where the patient's at. So we're not necessarily giving patients a dependence or abuse diagnosis. I think that's an interesting difference between the medical model and the model we're using, is that mostly we're taking an inventory of what patients are reporting to us. And when they are ready for some kind of treatment modality or ask for some kind of additional help, then we may, you know, change that diagnosis or update it to an abuse or dependence diagnosis, depending on whether or not they want treatment.
Other questions for Helen or Elizabeth? That was very informative. Thank you both. That 75-33% statistic is just startling to me. And it's been that way for quite some time now. No other questions? I guess, Mark, are we ready to move on to the carry forward?
You know, what we have been forgetting to do is to ask if there's any members of, if there's any public comment. My apologies.
All right. My apologies. Members of the public, would you care to comment? Don't see any.
I did have one. This is Richard Sullivan. I'm sorry, council member. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the 54%, the success, or so to speak, that is happening, are people asking for treatment when they get to a certain stage and maybe things, they do start becoming suppressed and you start, you know, the people that are moving through your program that you're seeing, what are the numbers about people that are maybe seeking substance use disorder treatment? Do you have any things there?
You know, we have done a fair number of applications for residential treatment, but I would say that most folks are interested in talk therapy. A couple have been able to engage in some counseling treatment through our STOP program, where they want to discuss harm reduction. But a couple of our patients have gone to 90-day treatment programs. I would say a small handful have done the application for that. A few patients, I would say that as far as recovery, we're finding that a lot of patients are more interested in dealing with mental health symptoms, like symptoms that may be secondary to meth use, an inability to rest, anxiety, insomnia, really disturbing hallucinations or voices. And so we've got a couple of patients who are engaged in services at Citywide. And so that's the kind of recovery or treatment that patients are asking for, not necessarily to stop using, but to deal with the negative consequences that their use may bring.
Thank you.
Liz, do you have any other comments about that, about treatment?
No, I think that's right. I mean, I think everybody is, it's very individualized in terms of, like, we really let people guide us in, what they want in terms of treatment or, other support. So I don't think it's, we've seen lots of different things, but yeah, we've definitely seen people engage in talk therapy, engage in treatment programs, engage in other, group stuff, as well as the STOP program here. We have used mirtazapine, as a medication, assisted treatment for methamphetamine use. There's a small study, showing that it reduces, can reduce use. But we really only do that in the context of people saying, I want to do this. I'm okay with another med because you really do need to take it once a day. So we definitely use that if people want and are interested and feel like that's not going to be a burden. We have used that as well. I guess one other question, Mark, that you brought up was just our capacity during COVID. So I'll just say one quick thing about that. Very interestingly, in terms of essential visits, because all our patients in pop-up, for the most part, were viremic or are just becoming suppressed, we left our clinic, completely open for them during this time. We did try to get people's cell phones. We did try to encourage longer medication pickups for them. And so one interesting thing that we presented at AIDS 2020, and we're still sort of working through the data, is that we saw in our overall clinic population who was homeless that their viral suppression went down, but actually our patients' viral suppression went up a little and then kind of stayed the same. And so that was encouraging. I think we need some more information from that, but in some ways it looks like it may have been protective for patients to have this kind of access to care, especially during this time when so much upheaval has happened for people experiencing homelessness in the city.
Thank you for answering that question. And thank you for the presentation. Great.
No problem.
You'll see all the many thanks in chat.
Seeing no other questions, I believe next is the carry forward.
Yes, and thank you both again for that presentation. Certainly timely. All right, before we go to the last agenda item, since we've made such good progress on everything else, I do want to apologize. Steering did want a poll done for an evaluation. Maybe it's just my aging brain cells. I could not figure out how to do a non-multiple choice poll via Zoom. So what I'll do is I'll just send out like a doodle poll as an evaluation after the fact that will allow you to type in your answers rather than just choose multiple choice. So that will happen. It's just not happening at the end of this meeting. And if anyone knows how to actually have a type in poll and wants to train me, please reach out to me. All right. So moving on, I'll share screen and we'll go over a motion that is on the floor. It's coming from steering and traveled, first of all, throughout all of the committees, mainly looking at two areas. First of all, the needs assessment recommendations from last year, but primarily the recommendations from HHS. So you have before you now is, excuse me, the overall motion from steering. And then we have some breakout language, but I'll turn it over now to Kevin to walk us through this.
Yes, thank you, Mark. So most of you have heard this information before. The carry forward this year is anticipated for Part A to be just under $350,000, and for Part A MA Minority AIDS Initiative funding, right around $60,000 available. As always with carry forward dollars, it's important to bear in mind that the funding term is quite brief, 5 months or less, typically around October-ish through the end of February. So they're one-time funds and not to be used for ongoing expenses. To ensure that we do spend down carry forward dollars, funding should go to programs that essentially have an existing HHS contract. Okay, and no new positions, obviously. It's a comparatively small amount of money available. The recommendation that we have put together includes four broad areas, the first being emergency financial assistance, $80,000 for the increased needs posed by COVID, and $20,000 specifically directed toward senior clients, which was suggested by last year's needs assessment. EFA grants, as you know, are payments to third-party providers connected to housing, utilities, medical, and other services. So very basic living expenses, including eviction prevention for Ryan White eligible clients, and of course, many newly unemployed people. So allocation to emergency financial assistance directly expands the number of grants available to clients without increasing program or administrative cost. Next, food insecurity continues to be a very serious problem during COVID, as well as an ongoing need for Ryan White clients. With just under 30,000, we plan to explore increasing the provision of meals and groceries, certainly, but also methods to deliver that food, since a big part of the problem is the severely restricted mobility of clients. Third, client incentive vouchers. Most years, we are able to direct more in unexpended admin savings toward vouchers. This year, there is roughly a half or a third, actually, of that usual amount available. And clients' request for these vouchers is quite high now, as you might expect. And again, a chief problem is the inability of clients to move about for themselves. So we will explore food delivery, including DoorDash, if possible, to address food insecurity. Finally, we are suggesting that we essentially place in reserve a portion of these carry forward dollars, roughly $200,000 in total. That's a lot of money where I come from, but it's not a lot of funding. to protect the system of care. This would be available for not yet precisely known expenses, but would keep us nimble to respond, at least in some measure, to the needs that we think might emerge with a fall second wave of COVID. I think that's about it. We'd be happy to try to respond to any questions.
Not seeing any questions. Public comment? Okay. Well, seeing as there's no public comment or questions or discussion, this is a motion on the floor coming from steering traveling throughout all of the committees. So we will go to a roll call vote.
Mark, can I ask a quick question real quick?
Sorry, yes.
Through this whole, like for the last 3 months, but from 5 months ago when all this crap started, all this corona madness started, what is a second wave? Are we still in the first wave, or what is a second wave? Are we going to get a third wave, or are we getting half a wave, or what's going on? Nobody talks about, the real deal, Holyfield. What are we in the first wave, or this stuff is going to go on to 2022 and beyond, because so many people not going to take the vaccine. It's more and more people asymptomatic, and it's more and more people that are just not following protocol. And do we really know how this is spread? Do we really know how corona is being spread? So I'm just wondering, just putting somebody in quarantine, they could be asymptomatic, So I'm just saying, I just want, when I heard you say, we're expecting a second wave. Are we out of the first wave yet?
Well, to hear Dr. Anthony Fauci, the leading expert on infectious disease, he actually says, no, we are not out of the first wave. We never got down to the baseline level, any lower than 30,000 infections a day, unlike European countries. So, we are still in the first wave, and yet with most respiratory transmitted epidemics, you can expect a second, perhaps third wave and beyond. Are there any physicians? Yeah, Elizabeth, are you, anybody else? Helen, would you like to comment on Ms. Billy's questions?
I don't really feel qualified to comment on that, Ms. Billy, but I promise I'll do some research and get you some information. We do have a weekly digest that's compiled by all of our infectious disease specialists here in our department, Ms. Billy. So I promise I'll call you and give you some info and maybe can share it with the council during our next meeting.
And real quick, since thank you for your input, let me ask this quick question to you and the whole council. I've been HIV positive for over 35 years. Now, is this vaccine being tested on people living with the virus too, on people that have cancer, on people that have hepatitis C, or are they just making one vaccine for the whole kit and caboodle? So, nobody's talking about that. Nobody. Nobody. So what are we to do? I'm just asking the question. Who was that, Elizabeth, that just spoke?
With Helen.
Helen, what are we to do, honey? What am I to do?
Well, I really want to help us and help HIV consumers in San Francisco feel like they have access to the latest information. So, maybe I can circulate out the HIV division's COVID digest and send it along our email. Are you on the email list, Ms. Billy?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yeah, I will I will send out that information because it does have a lot of local information it has information separated into what's important locally, what's important nationally, and globally. So if we could pay real good attention to what's important locally, that might help you feel like, okay, I know what's going on here in San Francisco.
Okay, thank you, dear. Thank you.
Well, and if you want to send that to Melina, I don't think she'll mind sending that out just to the full list, which is the council plus friends of the council.
Thank you so much.
Could I add something, Mark? Richard Sullivan?
Yeah.
I'll just real quick along those lines. You know, a couple of my people in my building, they said, you know, tested positive. So, you know, that was the final chord for me. So I signed up for a test and I got tested and thankfully I was negative. And but this is an HIV planning council. I've lived with HIV for 17 years. And the feelings that came up waiting for those test results, it was parallel to like back in those days. I mean, things were different then. I was reckless and irresponsible, and it led to me contracting. This time, you know, I just wanted to put that out. This is HIV here we're talking about, and the COVID and the feelings that came up waiting for that test result harkened me back to those days. It was kind of frightening and very apprehensive. And I'm grateful and blessed that I got the result that I did. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard, for sharing that. Thank you, Ms. Kelly, for your questions. If there's no more, I can go to a roll call vote. Again, you're voting on the use of carry forward funds, the allocation scenario that Kevin just went over. Again, on the floor, no need to be moved or seconded. Laura Thomas.
Yes.
Oh, council members, please unmute. Richard Sullivan.
Yes.
Michelle Spence?
Yes. Yes.
JP Soto?
Yes.
Has Gwen Smith joined us? Charles Cerrone?
Yes.
Laura Thomas for Mike Shriver?
Yes.
Has Darpin Sachdev joined us? Ken Pierce?
Yes.
Nay Nascimento?
Yes.
Jesse Murphy?
Yes.
Has TJ Lee Miyake joined us? Has Antoine Matthews joined us? Ellen Lin?
Yes.
Lily Croutel?
Yes.
Juba Kalamka?
Yes.
Lee Jewell?
Yes.
Bruce Ito?
Yes.
Ron Hernandez?
Yes.
Paul Harkin?
Yes.
Thomas Noble and Kevin Hutchcroft?
Kevin, I assume we're abstaining?
Yes. Yes, we are abstaining.
Great.
David Gonzalez?
Yes.
Matt Geltmaker?
Yes.
Elaine Flores?
Yes.
Has Cicely Emerson joined us? Billy Cooper?
Yes, and I regretfully have to leave everybody. Everybody have a lovely evening. I have to go.
Ed Chitty?
Yes.
Heather Cadabas?
Yes.
Ben Kavanga?
Hey, beloved.
Ben Kavanga?
Yes.
Jack Bowman?
Yeah. Bill, I'm here. Can I give you 2 minutes?
Bill Bloom?
Okay. I'm staying.
Chuck Adams?
Yes.
Not with a bang, but a whimper.
Motion carries.
Thank you, everyone. Mark, does that exhaust our agenda?
And that's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote. Next meeting will be August 24th, 4 to 6 p.m. Thank you. Thank you for your time, your attention.
Thank you.
Ciao, everybody. Bye,
everyone. Kevin.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Be safe.
Be safe.
Bye, all.
Those faces disappear. Goodbye.
Hey, Mark.
Goodbye, Charles.
Can you give me a call?
Yeah, I'll give you a call.
Thank you.
Since I see everyone gone. Okay.